August the 24th, 1982, Truth for Today Bible Class. Last week we got down in chapter 9 of Esther through the 17th verse. And that makes us pretty near to the end, chapter 10 being only 3 verses. Now, we have remarked on the fact that although this book does not contain the name of deity, of God, that 5 times in acrostic form hidden, that it is there. And very significantly is there because it is showing that in this time of darkness for Israel, that God is not speaking and revealing himself. They are in captivity. Their land is in desolation. Their city is in ruins. And they're in servitude. And so, when they are in that condition, God is not revealing himself. But to keep his people, to preserve them, and to get them to do what he wants them to do behind the scenes, he arranges things so that it will work out. And so as we have been reading this book, to see how things turned out, we can see that God is indeed got his finger on the deal. You'll notice that in this book that we've had no dreams of anybody getting a revelation from God. God has not spoken audibly to anybody. There have been actually no signs. And it's because Israel is off the scene. The signs, the miracles, the speakings of God and so on are connected with Israel being on the scene, his people. And that is the reason why today, since Israel are not God's people, we don't have signs and miracles and that sort of thing. When Israel's history ceases, we always have mystery. And that is exactly what we have here in the book of Esther. Now let's start in with verse 18 of chapter 9. But the Jews that were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day thereof, and on the 14th thereof, and on the 15th day of the same, they rested and made a day of feasting and gladness. Now we're talking about this time of Purim, which at this time gave Israel a chance to defend themselves against their enemies, and especially to defend themselves against the followers of Haman, the wicked Agagite, an Amalekite. And we find that in Shushan, they actually gave 3 days for their festivities, the 13th, 14th, and 15th. I notice on most occasions, Jewish calendars, it gives only the 14th and 15th. However, I do have one here hanging on my shelf that gives the 3 dates, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, a festival of the Jews each year. And we'll soon find out why it was organized as a festival. Therefore the Jews of the villages that dwelt in the unwalled towns made the 14th day of the month of Adar a day of gladness and feasting and a good day on sending portions one to another. Well, that's out in the out-of-the-way places, and so they didn't start it as soon as they did a Shushan. I notice that it's the Jews. Now, this is particularly all right because this is really the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, and of course you know Mordecai was of the tribe of Benjamin, and of course among some of those would be the Levites too, who with Judah and Benjamin dwelt about Jerusalem in that part of the country. And the ten tribes had been taken long before by Assyria. Now, it was habit in those days of feasting when they were happy, and not only that, but to share with others. And so if they had a good feast and they had a good bowl of soup or something of that kind, why, they would take some over to their neighbors. Well, that little courtesy has just about died out in our country. It has been among the early settlers, and even up until, even when I can remember, it was somewhat done sometimes. Somebody made a good cake or a pie or something like that to give some to a neighbor. And that is the spirit in these folks doing. They were so happy they wanted to express it. They wanted other folks to know it too. And so it was a way of really rejoicing. And Mordecai wrote this among them, that they should keep the 14th day of the month, Adar, and the 15th day of the same yearly. And as I say, some keep the 13th yet. But he made this as a ordinance. Remember that Mordecai could do that because he is next to the king, and he could make orders, and especially over Israel. It seems that he had sort of assumed an authority over Israel. Their royal family was gone. In fact, the royal family was imprisoned in Babylon, which we will get a little more of. And so they weren't in Medo-Persia. Well, and the days wherein the Jews rested from their enemies, and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to joy, and from mourning into a good day, I got clear down to, like, yeah, I guess I should get 21 here, to establish this among them, that they should keep the 14th day of the month, Adar, and the 15th day of the same yearly. And the days wherein the Jews rested from their enemies, and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to joy, and from mourning unto a good day, that they should make them days of feasting and joy, and of sending portions one to another and gifts to the poor. And so, in verse 23, and the Jews undertook to do this, or to do as they had been begun, as Mordecai had written unto them. Because Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had devised against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast Pur, that is, the lot, to consume them and to destroy them. Of course, being superstition, being an idolater, he would cast the lot to see when would be the good time to do it. Back in the olden days, and superstition and so on, why, a general never lead his army into a battle unless he was see all of what the signs were and so forth. Had to be just right. The Romans were especially good at that, and they had different ways of finding out from the killing of animals and looking at the insides and seeing how they looked, or taking a look at a certain hour of the day and seeing how many birds they see and what kind. And then some went to fortune tellers and the like. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letters that his wicked device, which he devised against the Jews, should return upon his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged from the gallows. That is, Haman. Wherefore, they call those days Purim. Now, Pur is a lot. Purim is a plural, I-M, so it means lots, days of lots, after the name of Pur. Therefore, for all the words of this letter, and of that which they had seen concerning this matter, and which had come unto them, the Jews ordained and took upon them and upon their seed and upon all such as joined themselves unto them, so as it should not fail, that they would keep these 2 days according to their writing and according to their appointed time every year. And it's still today among those who call themselves Jews, it's still a feast day, a time of rejoicing. We call it Purim yet. And that those days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city, and that these days of Purim should not fail from among the Jews, nor the memorial of them that perish from their seed. Then Esther the queen, the daughter of Abihail, Mordecai the Jew, wrote with all authority to confirm this second letter of Purim. And he sent the letters unto all the Jews to the 127 provinces of the king of Ahasuerus with words of peace and truth to confirm those days of Purim in their times appointed, according as Mordecai the Jew and Esther the queen had enjoined them, and as they had decreed for themselves and for their seed the matters of the fastings and their cry. Esther seems to have quite a little bit of freedom now, too, and she can do some things on her own. I just wonder how much she was under control of the decree that was put out at the time that Vashti was deposed, and the order was to go out and all the women should give due honor to their husbands. Well, I believe Esther did. We don't find any fault with her, at least. And the last verse of chapter 9. And the decree of Esther confirmed these matters of Purim, and it is written in the book. And it was written in the book. Well, not the Bible. I don't think that Mordecai or Esther, either one, had copies of it. There were only a very few that had any copies of it in the dispersion they brought back and put in the temple. Well, we'll find what book. Verse chapter 10. And the king Ahasuerus laid a tribute upon the land, and upon the isles of the sea, and all the acts of his power and of his might, and the declaration of the greatness of Mordecai, whereunto the king advanced him. Are they not written in the book of the chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? Now we have books called Chronicles, and we have books called Kings in our Bible, but they are of Israel. And so the kings of Media and Persia also had chronicles they kept. And I think we find also that Nebuchadnezzar did in his kingdom. It was a common thing in those days to write down chronicles. Now, you know what chronicles is? It comes from chronos, meaning time. A day book, diary. Record, public record, day by day. That's it, chronology. So, when you read the books of the kings and the chronicles in our Bible, why, you'll know that that is a court record that was kept. And it was put in the canon of scripture because it was kept very carefully and God put his approval on it, wanted it kept for memory. Now the last verse of Esther. For Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people, and speaking peace to all his seed. Now you'll notice in this book, as we went through it, that you don't find any faults against Mordecai or Esther. You don't find anything that they did wrong. You know, you're not too many characters in our Bible that it doesn't record something that they did wrong. But the case of Mordecai and Esther, we don't find, and it's the same. Now, we've been talking here in this book of Esther of a king, and his name was Ahasuerus. He wasn't known to all peoples of the world with that same name. And when he married Vashti and was connected with the other countries, his name was Astyages. Now, many of these names are really titles rather than what we call a name. And they vary because they may be in various dialects or languages. He's called Ahasuerus in Esther 1:1 when we started out. We found his name there, and his name is given over and over in that. But in the history by Herodotus, it gives a record there of Astyages marrying Vashti. And it doesn't mention Esther. Now, over in Ezra 6:14, we have another name for him, and let's take a look at that. Ezra 6:14. That's back just a little way from Esther. And the elders of the Jews builded, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet, and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they builded and finished it, that is a temple, according to the commandment of the God of Israel, and according to the commandment of Cyrus, and Darius, and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Now these are put in reverse order here, and Artaxerxes is our Ahasuerus. And there was Cyrus, his son, and his name was Darius part of the time, so it's hard to find all of these. But here is one mention of it, and we have, I think, another Nehemiah 21. That's just the next book after Ezra. No, it isn't. 21 is 2:1. Nehemiah 2:1. In fact, we can read from 1 to 8 there, I think. Nehemiah 2:1. And it came to pass in the month Nisan. Now, that's in the spring. It's the first month of the Jewish year and the month in which the Passover is observed. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that's Ahasuerus, that wine was before him, and I, Nehemiah is talking, took up the wine and gave it unto the king. I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, well, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art sick? Not sick. This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. And I said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldst send me into Judah, and to the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. And the king said unto me, the queen sitting by him, who would the queen be? The sitting by him? The Esther? Yes, the Esther. And she has a lot of influence in these things, you see. How long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, and he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertaineth to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Now these, you see, are all relative to that time, and quite often as we read these different books and so on, we can't sometimes put them together as we might. Now, we have also another name here. Now, let's see. Let's take a look at Isaiah 45:1-5. Isaiah 45:1-5. Now, we have to go over quite a little way. Isaiah 45:1-5. That takes me a little bit sometimes to get these leaves. All right, here I got it. Isaiah 45:1-5. This is prophecy. You have a man named here before he's born. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus. Now, who's Cyrus? He's the son of Ahasuerus and Esther. And here's a prophecy concerning him. To Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings, open for him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. The two-leaved gates. Now this refers to the taking of Babylon by Cyrus. And the two-leaved gates, where they lay gates or double gates, all along the river bed through the center of the city, which could be shut and locked at night so no enemy could get in, although the river was fairly deep. And so here's a prophecy of how he will take Babylon by the two-leaved gates. Now, I'll get read you a little bit of history pretty soon, if I have time. I'll give you some idea there. And I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. You'll be a conqueror. And I will give thee the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, am the God of Israel. For Jacob, my servant's sake, and Israel, mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me, hasn't been born yet. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I gird thee, though thou hast not known me. And so on. So this is a little prophecy here concerning the son, Cyrus, of Ahasuerus and Esther. Now, turn to Jeremiah 51. And starting in verse 25. Now, let's see, 25, yeah, here it is. Well, this is talking about Babylon, a prophecy against Babylon. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith the Lord. A mountain is spoken of as a stronghold or city, which destroyeth all the earth. And I will stretch out mine hand upon thee, and roll thee down from the rocks. I will make thee a burnt mountain. And they shall not take of thee a stone for a corner, nor a stone for foundations, but thou shalt be desolate forever, saith the Lord. Set ye up a standard in the land, blow the trumpet among the nations, prepare the nations against her, call together against her the kingdoms of Ararat, Mini, and Ashkenaz, appoint a captain against her, cause them horses to come up as rough caterpillars, prepare against her the nations with the kings of the Medes, the captains thereof and all the rulers thereof and all the land of his dominion. Medes. Cyrus. And the land shall tremble in sorrow, for every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a desolation without an inhabitant. The mighty men of Babylon have forborne to fight. They have remained in their holes. Their might has failed. They became as women. They have burnt her dwelling places. Her bars are broken. One post shall run to meet another. The messengers, you see. I'll get the picture here in the city. One post shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end. And that king of Babylon, he was down in the palace having a good time, and the handwriting had just showed on the wall. And this is what this is talking about. And that the passages are stopped, and that the reeds they have burned with fire, and the men of war are affrighted. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughters of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It is time to thresh her, yet a little while, and the time of her harvest shall come. And I want to read you just a little bit about how the city of Babylon is taken here. Let's see here. We've got a little time yet, haven't we? Now, this Herodotus was written about 600 B.C., or a little after that, I guess. And the copy that I have is very old, and it was printed about 1818. Cyrus is marching against Babylon. He did have a little battle with them, and they ran inside the city and closed it up. But having long acquainted with the restless spirit of Cyrus and his custom of attacking all nations without distinction, they had laid up provisions for many years and were under no apprehension about a siege. On the other hand, Cyrus himself, finding much time consumed and his affairs not at all advanced, fell in a great doubt what he should do next. When at last, either by the suggestion of some other person or his own sagacious invention, he resolved upon the following stratagem. He posted one part of his army near the place where the river enters Babylon, and the rest in another station below, where the same river leaves the city, with orders to enter as soon as they should see the channel passable. That is the water going down. Having given this direction and encouraged his forces, he went with the useless part of his men to the lake and did as the queen of Babylon had done. For by opening a large trench, he turned the stream into the lake. And by that means, the river subsiding, the ancient channel became fordable, which the Persians, who were appointed to that purpose, observing, put their orders in execution, and boldly entered the city, having the water no higher than the middle of the thigh, so they could wade. Yet if the Babylonians had been well informed, or had foreseen the attempt of Cyrus, they would doubtless have destroyed his army, and not have thus blindly suffered the Persians to pass, for by shutting all the little gates that led down to the river, and mounting brickworks that run along the quay, they might have taken them in a kind of a cage, whereas having no suspicion of such a design, they were unexpectedly surprised by the Persians. The extent of the city was such that if we may believe the Babylonians, when those who inhabited near the center were taken, the people who dwelt about the extremities of Babylon heard nothing of their disaster, but were celebrating a festival that day, Belshazzar, with dancing and all manner of rejoicing, till they received certain information of the general fate, and thus Babylon was the first time taken. So that is what Herodotus tells us about that, and of course confirms it's what is said in the Bible. Well, there are other sources for such things as this. I had to hunt a little bit in Herodotus. I'd forgotten where that was at, and it wasn't indexed too well. Well, let's see, I have 15 minutes ahead. Okay. Well, let's see if I have some other references here. I didn't take you to Daniel 5:31, did I?
No.
Well, we'll take a look at that one. In fact, this is about the same thing, and that gives us a little bit more of the details. I just got that one verse down there, but I'll have to read a little bit more than that. Suppose we start right in the very first part of that chapter, because we got to get this story, and it's interesting. Now, Israel were taken captive and put into Babylon in the year 496 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar was the king, and his son was Evil-Merodach, and he didn't reign very long. His son was Nabonidus. He reigned for quite a little while. Nabonidus was the father of Belshazzar. Now, during the lifetime of Nabonidus, he made Belshazzar his co-regent to reign along with him. And so this night in Babylon, when they're having this great feast and all this hilarity, Nabonidus is out with his army somewhere else, and his son is in charge in the city of Babylon. And so while dad's away, you know what the son does. And so he has a great and hilarious time. And it was his great last great and hilarious time, too. So that gives you a little introduction to it. So Belshazzar made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before 1,000. Just think of a ruler being so low as to drink wine in the presence of his subjects. You know better. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels, which his father Nebuchadnezzar, that'd be his grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein. And of course it wasn't the custom in those days to have women at those feasts, but he did. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver and of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against a candlestick on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Now, wouldn't that be ghostly? Then the king's countenance was changed. His face changed entirely. He'd been very happy and hilarious, and now it's changed. And his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loose, and his knees smote once against another. Not need. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Now, I think that king could read that all right. But he didn't know what it meant. That was the trouble. I will get to that. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was the king Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by the reason of the words of the king, and no doubt this was Nebuchadnezzar's wife. It could have been the wife of Nabonidus. But I think it was somebody who knew more about these things than what she would. And now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house, and the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers." And of course, you remember how he interpreted the king's dream in chapter 2 here of Daniel and so on. So no doubt she was the one who knew. Forasmuch as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel whom the king named Belteshazzar. I'll let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. Boy, she had a lot of confidence in him, didn't she? Well, she knew. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding, excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, and they, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. They could read it, but they couldn't interpret it. And I have heard of thee that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now, if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and thou shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. For Belshazzar was the second. Now, some of the critics have fallen all over this thing and so on, not knowing their history well enough. In fact, they just couldn't believe there was a Belshazzar. Of course, they've turned up some records of the ancient times and found a prayer that David now has made for his son, Belshazzar. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom, and majesty, and glory, and honor. And for the majesty that gave him, all people, nations, and language trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive, and whom he would, he set up, and whom he would be put down. And when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like unto the beasts, and his dwelling was among the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this." He knew it. But you know what a young man do? He knows what's right. "But hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them. And thou hast praised the gods of silver, and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, but see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was a part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written." And this is the writing that was written. "Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin." Well, you would look almost something like Medes, Mene, and so on. But we'll see. This is the interpretation of the thing. "Mene, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances, nor found want. Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians." Is given. They had taken the main citadel of the city at that time and were roaming through the streets, and the messengers coming to tell him of the fall of the city. He sees the writing on the wall. The last minute. "And then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel's scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius, that's Cyrus, took the kingdom." Darius is his father. Ahasuerus. "And Ahasuerus the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old." Now I have to explain myself on it. Well, Cyrus was the head of the army. But his father gets the glory. And actually, the man who took the city was not Cyrus. He wasn't doing a person himself. It was his general, Gobryas. Now we get our history straight. So that was the fall of Babylon. Now, that would give us something of the age. Now, this was several years after he had married Queen Esther. And here is Cyrus, who was his son, and he's a warrior, so we'd say that it's at least 20 years. So that gives us some idea. Now, we have to guess a little bit about those. Now, if you have your companion Bible, I think you can turn back to Appendix 57. Just give a note on that. I have a few minutes yet. Appendix 57. Now, Appendix 50 is a good one for you to study, and we're just putting an article out in the next paper about studying dates and times and so on. And you should get acquainted with these. Help you to understand so much better. Page 81 in the appendices, appendix number 57. It gives you the line of the Persian kings. Now, these aren't too particularly interesting and so on, unless you have been reading some ancient history. Won't mean too much to you. But you'll note here that the names are given by Herodotus in the first one, and I read you some of the history of Herodotus a while ago. And it gets Vashti down at the end of the list. Gives the kings, Achies and Lydus and Candales, Gyges. There's an interesting story about Gyges, but I won't tell you that one. And Artis, and Sadiatus, and Aliatus, or Aliates, if you want to call it that, that's in Greek. And then here is Ienus, which is in the Persian Vashti. And remember in the beginning of our story, the book of Esther, that she was deposed because she wouldn't show herself before the king and his revelers along with him. And so she got deposed, and so Esther got to be king, or queen. Now, we spoke about Astyages, and I gave his names. He's called Arsames in the inscriptions on the Behistun Rock. And you'll find a picture of that in your appendices. And in the Chaldeans, the cylinder of Cyrus, he is called Cambyses. So you see the different names and titles. Now, in Esther 1:1, it tells you here it is called Ahasuerus. In Ezra, Artaxerxes and Nehemiah, and Darius the Median in Daniel 5:31, which we just read. Now from him comes his son Cyrus, the Persian. Now that is the one we're just reading about, which took Babylon, although his father got the glory because I think he was rather supervising, because Cyrus, I think, wasn't too old at this time yet. Now Cyrus is also called Cambyses the Second. He also calls Cyrus in the cylinder of Cyrus. And this Cambyses is also called Cambyses in that. And then on down from there is Hystaspes. You find him in history. And then Darius Hystaspes. That gives you the list of the Persian kings. In case you're studying history or reading the history of Herodotus or whatever you might be doing, I have up here at my right hand an ancient history by Webster, published back in 1913, and you find some interesting things in connection with Israel and that. That, of course, is the reason for the reading the history along with these Bible studies, is how these folks had relationships and impinged upon Israel's history. And that, if we get some of these, right, helps us with it. You can study some of the Roman kings in later times and the end of the Great Persecution. Well, now, this is the end of this lesson. Finishes us with Esther. We have to have something for next week.